Welcome to the Gym Heroes Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peacock. Today's show is brought to you by GymDesk, the easiest gym management software you'll ever use. Take payments, create marketing automations, track attendance, and much more. To try the software out free, go to GymDesk.com. No credit card or painful sales call required. Our hero today is Corey Sterling, a licensed attorney specializing in fitness businesses, especially yoga studios. In this episode, Corey unpacks the biggest legal pitfalls that fitness businesses find themselves in. He then counterpoints these with three easy ways every yoga and fitness business can protect itself legally. Finally, Corey reveals how your generic liability waivers might not help you in court. Without further ado, Corey Sterling. All right, Corey, welcome to the Gym Heroes Podcast. For the listeners, go ahead and introduce yourself, your background in fitness, but also in law.
Hello, Gym Heroes. So cool to be connected. I wish I brought a cape for this call just to play the part of a hero myself. But it's cool to be connected with the community and a little bit about myself. So I've been a fitness enthusiast for years. In terms of being a group fitness instructor, I've led running classes, I've led indoor spinning classes, I've led HIIT and other sort of lightweight training classes, and I'm a yoga teacher and a Pilates teacher, and fitness is just my life. Like, it's what I do, it's how I spend my time, it's who I am. And professionally, I'm a lawyer for a lot of fitness professionals. I'd say the majority of my clients are fitness professionals in some sort, whether it's an online trainer who's got their own business, whether it's a brick and mortar gym or CrossBox, or whether it's someone who has an online studio or boutique studio in any sense. So I understand the industry. I love it. I love working with fitness professionals, and I also am a fitness professional. That's why it just made sense to focus my professional time in this way.
Excellent. I'm actually curious. So how does your law practice work? Are you like an independent practitioner?
Yeah, I started 7 years ago. I started my own law firm. So I used to wear a suit and a tie before I wore my muscle tees and my shorts. Mm-hmm. And I lived the corporate life for a couple of years. I was extremely unfulfilled. I was ready to quit being a lawyer because I wasn't made out to be a cog in the corporate wheel. And before I quit, one of my mentors made a recommendation to me. He's like, "Hey man, before you stop being a lawyer, I know how much you love health and wellness, and I know that it's your life. See if there's a way to merge your technical skills as a lawyer with what you love to do personally, which is health and wellness and fitness." And at first it seemed really weird, but I was like, "Okay, cool. Why don't I do it?" And I basically set out a criteria where I would only offer services I could do online so that I could travel the world, which was really important to me. And I only would work with heart-leading health and wellness professionals who are making the world a healthier and better place by offering their services. So I started out like that. That was 7 years ago, and thankfully, it's still going. So the name of my law firm is Conscious Counsel, and we've won a whole lot of awards. We've got 365 five-star Google reviews. And yeah, I love what I get to do and who I get to work with.
Conscious Counseling. Man, that is such a good yoga branding name.
Yeah, and I think it's also just offering heart-leading legal advice. The biggest thing that I saw missing in the space for health and wellness professionals was someone who could make law palatable and easy and direct and straightforward. So that's the mission that I'm on.
Awesome. So along that train of thought, what's a heart-led business? You've mentioned that before. I saw that in some of your emails. What is a heart-led business to you?
Heart-leading business means that the direction of the intention and time that you spend building your business is directed first and foremost with your heart. So usually when we talk about the heart, it's like, how do I feel about this? Does this feel good? Is this in alignment with who I am? Is this in integrity with the person I want to be in the business that I want to create? And that's very different from, you know, usually a lot of the head-driven decisions. Head-driven decisions are usually like, how can I make as much money as possible? How can I grow the business as much as possible? How can I do all these sorts of things? And what's cool is when you take a heart-centered approach, all of those other things are naturally going to come. Like, you're going to be abundant. You can live in financial abundance and have financial freedom. And people will naturally be attracted to you in your business because what you're offering is your own unique expression of what's required in the space, whether that's, you know, as a personal trainer, as a gym, as a studio, as a CrossBox, anything like that. So for me, it's like I just get lit up and inspired by working with people who are doing what they feel, operative word being feel, they were put on this earth to do. And I just love supporting them and helping them be protected.
Great. So I obviously, you know, with a heart-led business, the law is not always intuitive in the same way that the heart is. What are the biggest legal mistakes that you see heart-led business operators making?
The biggest mistakes are not having customized industry-specific agreements. That's really it. It begins and it ends there. There are a couple of other small mistakes that I see being made all the time. Like, for example, not registering a trademark and then losing all of your intellectual property, not setting up the correct structure for your business, or not having an operating agreement with your business partner. There's all sorts of stuff like that. But first and most importantly, just so that everyone who's listening understands normally how a legal issue will arise or how a problem will take place. There will be some form of disagreement or damage suffered by somebody, and they're going to say that you or your business are responsible for that having happened. Mm. At that point, it's your job to show, actually, I'm not responsible because this is what we agreed to, or this is what our agreement says. And when you can respond with a customized specific agreement that covers you and your business, then you're in a position of control in the sense of someone making an allegation or claim against you. When you don't have those documents in place, or when you have bad copied templates that you downloaded or a friend gave you or something like that, when you're using something like that, if someone makes an allegation against you, you cannot respond with the same certainty, and thus they will be in control of the situation and you will not. So having customized specific legal agreements really is the most common mistake. Like, not having them is the most common mistake, and it's also the simplest solution.
Gotcha. So with liability waivers, it's an interesting one for me. I ran a little taekwondo club. I have friends that have run different martial arts schools and like fitness studios and stuff. And I'm pretty sure I'm fairly certain this is not true, but they've all claimed, well, okay, you just have them sign the liability waiver. You don't need to worry too much about whether or not you have liability insurance or anything like that. You know, that's all optional. Can you speak to that? I'm pretty sure that's not true, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's definitely not true. And the way that you want to think about a liability waiver and insurance, it's sort of like if you want to make gains at the gym, you have to have, you know, weight resistance training, a consistent regimen for that. Mm-hmm. And you have to have fitness. You have to have diet. Like, nutrition is a very, very important piece. You can do one and not the other and see some results. So for example, you can lift weights all you want and do it in any way. If you don't dial in your nutrition and what you're eating, you're going to see limited gains. If you have both of them, you're going to see fantastic gains. Also, you could just do the nutrition part and not do any sort of activity, and you would see some improvement, but not the same sort of improvement. Waivers of liability and on their own are very, very powerful and very, very helpful to the point that they're specific about the business, right? So let's say you had a small Taekwondo studio. If the waiver of liability was very specific to Taekwondo, so what sort of activities are we doing? What sort of movements are we doing? Hey, you're going to be rolling, and I assume in Taekwondo you roll. Is there rolling involved? like in jiu-jitsu?
That's jiu-jitsu. In taekwondo, we spar. We call it sparring.
Okay. Yeah. So they're sparring. You're going to be sparring with other people. You're going to be using headgear. You're going to be using foot gear, blah, blah, blah. This is all of the activities, all of the equipment, all of the risks, everything that could happen if the risk materializes. Let's say, God forbid, someone kicks you in your head and the headgear doesn't do its job. You could have a concussion. You could have PTSD, all of these sorts of things. So long as the waiver is specific and outlines all of those risks and the equipment and what happens if the risk materializes, then it's reasonable. If someone's going to sue you, you can say, hey, well, we told you what we were doing and how we were doing it and what could happen as a result. Insurance is there as the safety net that if God forbid, there's a problem, or if it gets to a massive settlement amount and you don't have that money to pay that, insurance will be able to help you so long that insurance covers the specific activities that you're doing, right? So that just goes without saying that your insurance should cover what you're doing. You could have one without the other, but they work best together. So if you, for example, let's say I don't have insurance and I have a waiver. Okay, someone signs the waiver, they come through, they get injured, they get hurt. They're a program developer, they had a concussion, they can no longer look at a screen, they can't do their job. Okay, cool. You sign this specific waiver of liability, all that sort of stuff. What are my alternatives? Well, at least I can pursue this, you know, pursue suing this person or not. Cool. I'm going to continue suing this person. You get drawn into the process. At some point, there's a settlement amount. That's where the insurance company would help in to pay for some of that. But it's just risky. It's like driving without a seatbelt. Like you need both. You need legal documents and insurance all the time.
Yeah. The specificity thing, that's new. That's new to me. I didn't know that. I worked for a karate school before, and they had a lawyer. They said they had a lawyer draw up a liability waiver, but the liability waiver was very general. It was like, exempting injury up to like decapitation or something. And it didn't really mention anything about specific movements or activities such as sparring and kickboxing or anything, or cardio kickboxing or hitting the back, like anything specific to anything that we did wasn't really mentioned so much to my memory.
Yeah, that's an example of a non-industry specific lawyer doing their service, right? Someone who doesn't understand the ins and outs of the industry and what the risks are. I can tell you why it matters. There's been countless number of waivers of liability that have been challenged or someone's been injured where a client has sent me a copy of the waiver and the complaint and whatever it is that's happening. And like, they sort of just like throw their mess onto me and I have to figure it out, which I've done for a lot of years. So I'm very good at. And the argument that is always made is, okay, you're right that I agreed not to hold you responsible, but you never told me we were going to be doing X or you never told me that we were going to be using this equipment. So as an example, right now I'm in Florida. I went to go do a yoga class yesterday at a new studio. There was nothing in the waiver of liability that had the word yoga. It didn't mention anything about using a block or straps or inversions or anything like that. God forbid if something happened to me, that studio is fully liable. Like that, the waiver of liability they're using is like not having a waiver of liability. So again, part of my job is to create awareness around the specifics because I've just been through the issues and problems so many times, but no one's talking about it because there aren't lawyers that work with Taekwondo studios or that work with yoga studios. So through all of the experiences I've been through, I just try to share the information so that people are aware of it.
Real quick before I put you back into the episode, GymDesk has powerful yet intuitive features to grow your business. And there's a few really great features I'd like to highlight. The first is a deep, best-in-class email and SMS marketing system with automation tools to make your life as a business person so much easier. It's like having a dedicated, full-featured email service provider native to your gym software. We're really proud of it, and it's something that we've recently overhauled. And in addition to all the stuff a good management software should do for you, like member management, attendance, booking, scheduling, and reporting, you can set up an easy, simple, attractive point of sale system to sell merchandise in person or through your website with just a few clicks. And if you like to provide members-only content, we have a content management system that lets you choose who can see what content and when, all visible from a member's web portal and the GymDesk user app. So give your gym the lift it deserves. Go to gymdesk.com or click the link in the description. Wow. So do you work outside of your state? Or you, I'm not exactly sure how that works. Do you work in other states?
Yeah, we work with clients all over the world. So like we've worked with studios in Australia, in New Zealand, in Singapore, in Croatia, in South Africa, in Korea, obviously Mexico, Canada, United States, all over Europe. And what we've done in the United States is we get lawyers from each jurisdiction to go through the set of documents that we create and make sure that they're applicable to state standards. But a lot of the times people seek us out because we're so industry specific and what we draft is to best legal practices. And the other thing to remember about all of this is Taekwondo is not a, there's no license, there's no legislation that deals, it's an unregulated industry. It's Taekwondo or let's say yoga or opening a gym, right? Like having a fitness facility, it's unregulated. There's no piece of state or federal legislation that says, okay, well, if you're opening a gym, then you need to have this and you need to do that. And so because there aren't any specific rules, being at best industry standards is the most important thing.
Awesome. So how do you, if for some reason listeners couldn't work with you, or they want, or they're working with somebody already and they want to make sure that they've done their due diligence, what do you look for in a lawyer who can actually provide you that industry specific liability waiver and any other kind of legal work?
Yeah, it would sort of be like some form of a basic interview process where you just want to say like, hey, how much do you understand about my business and what I do? And like what I would do is if I had my own studio and I didn't exist and I was looking for a lawyer, I'd say like, okay, well, what are some of the specific risks involved with Pilates? Or, you know, the four agreements that we normally sell are a privacy policy, terms of service, a waiver of liability, a membership agreement, and then a social media disclaimer. So I would say like, you know, what are the unique aspects of a monthly membership that a Pilates studio might have? And that's like, when I say it out loud, it sounds like such an obscure question. Like, you know, tell me about monthly recurring memberships at a gym. What do you know about them? A lot of lawyers don't know anything, but there's actually a lot of rules that exist behind that. So, that's the line of questioning that I would start with. But I'll also share this. I think that unfortunately for professional services, there's a lot more bad professionals than there are great professionals out there. And I just hear this from my clients who are like, oh, like my accountant never returns my emails or things like that. Like, oh, I had another lawyer. Like so many times people have been with another lawyer, engaged another lawyer, and then just like didn't get a response, or the person was too slow to get back to them and they were in a time sensitive situation. So I hope that it works for everyone, but that's the sort of line of question. You want to make sure someone understands the specifics of the relationships you have.
That's really good advice. You mentioned a social media waiver. That's one that I didn't really understand when I was operating. I was always nervous to post any pictures of class online. How do those work? Like what should be in a social media waiver? What's okay in terms of using people's images and what's not okay? Like how does that work?
So that's a really great question. And so the first thing to know is that we call it a social media disclaimer, and it's also a media release. Mm-hmm. So they're two different things. At law, there's something that's called a duty of care. So a duty of care means that a relationship exists at law. It's invisible. Like we don't see it. We don't think about it. It's not intuitive, but in law it exists, where if I'm giving recommendations or advice or tips and you're following what I say, I have a responsibility to make sure that you do not get injured by virtue of you following what I'm saying, right? So between a trainer and a client, it's very, very obvious, but that situation we can control because the trainer can make sure the client is signing a waiver of liability so that they're not going to hold them responsible. With social media, it's like you're going out there and you're broadcasting to the world how to touch your toes or how to have a better fighting position or how to do this or how to do that. And there is some liability associated with that. Now, because you cannot control every aspect of who's watching it and how they're following it, you just have a general disclaimer for social media saying, hey, if you're following any of these accounts, you're doing so voluntarily, you will see a medical physician before following, do not push yourself further than your limits, like all that sort of legal jargon that needs to be included. And that's like to protect yourself on social media, because exactly what you alluded to, a lot of clients will say, hey, I really want to put this stuff out there, but I'm not sure that I know how to, or that I'm not confident enough that it's okay in the way that I'm doing it. Now, that's the social media piece. A media release is when you are using someone else's words, image, video, audio, whatever it is, you need permission. So included in the document is something that says, hey, so long in connection with the services, if you leave us a testimonial or we record videos of you or we take photos of you, you understand that we're going to use it for marketing and promotional purposes. And if you do not want us to record any of this, please advise us and we'll make sure that we don't. But I've seen a lot of problems when people don't have that signed and someone comes back to the afterwards. So you want to make sure you have that. And then to answer your question of like, what should I not do? Be very, very careful about photos, videos of minors. That's yes. Like something I've seen clients get into a lot of problems with. So like anything, there's nuances and, you know, we could spend however long talking about that. But in terms of like, what are the basics things that you need to know? Like if you get people, if you have a social media disclaimer and people sign a media release, then you've avoided 99.9% of the problems.
Okay. What would be, so they've signed the media release. What would get you in hot water using an image of a minor? Because I used to teach, I mean, I had adult students, but when I was teaching, it was mostly, you know, children that I taught. So we'd do like pictures for class. We'd do pictures for like student of the month and I'd post the student of the month. And the parents usually liked it, but if there was a problem to be had there, I mean, what would get you into hot water?
The first thing, and you did this correctly, is that like you firstly, when you're dealing with minors, you want to make sure that whoever you're recording any photos or videos of, like that they're into it and that they support and that they're cool with it, and there's not going to be a problem. Because everything that I've spoken about, the problem's usually going to come from your clients. So A, the better relationship you have with your clients, the better and the more that you can avoid these problems. But specifically with kids, let's say first step, I would set up a separate, or I'd say at the beginning of class, hey guys, today we're going to be taking pictures. If anybody doesn't want their photo to be taken or to be used, please let us know and we'll make sure that we're not doing that or that you're not included. Same with like before I would post a student of the month, I would check in with the parents. Hey, you know, little Kimmy is the student of the month. We'd like to feature her on our Instagram and our website. Are you cool with that? If they don't have a problem, then you're not really going to have a problem. The issues come with, and some parents are, wow, man, there's a spectrum of people out there in the world that are very different, and things that you think wouldn't be a problem are really a problem to them. Mm-hmm. And I've received letters on behalf of my clients where it's like, you're exploiting my child. Now you're making them vulnerable. You're exposing my child to the internet. And like, there's also, that's might be real in some ways. Like I can't speak to that, but anytime that there's been a problem, it's from someone who was not aware of what was happening or didn't sign a document about what was happening. And then, you know, they'd say, take this down in 24 hours or this, or even they could just call the police outright and say, hey, this person is using a photo of my child on the internet. And like the police are definitely on the parent and guardian side in that particular scenario.
Yeah. Wow. So make sure that they're into it, they're on their side. I guess there's occasionally you do have situations where I've heard of situations like overseas adoption where like it's a real concern that the child is not anywhere searchable on the internet. Like they don't appear in media because there's some strange reason that people are looking for them or something. But most, you know, for most kids, that's not the case. You know, it's really, I guess, to the parents, what their stomach is for if they appear on Instagram, like a local Instagram or a local Facebook. Do you think that the exposure of your, like the reach, the natural reach of your channel, does that affect it as well? Because a lot of local gyms don't have a broad reach, right?
Yeah, it's, you know what? It's entire, all that matters, like you could have a, you could have 999 photos of kids and not have a single problem. But it's sort of just like, if you just run into the wrong parent who's, that this is the wrong issue for them, that they're like, you know, there's a lot of things maybe that parent doesn't care about, but what they do care about is this. It's not about the size of your Instagram or the size of your Facebook. It's just like, hey, you are putting a photo of my child on the internet without my permission. Like, stay away.
Gotcha. We've covered a lot of different ways that yoga studios and fitness studios, martial arts studios also can protect themselves. Are there any other easy ways that they can legally protect themselves, or have you sort of covered the most important ones?
The other thing that you just want to think about is if you have a team, if they're contractors or employees, that's a very real legal question. That's probably like of everything that's most relevant and changing the quickest, that's the issue. So are your team contractors or employees? If they're employees, do you have an employee handbook? Is it updated to reflect, you know, modern values in society? All that stuff's really important. And then I think the other thing is just trademarks, because trademarks are probably like a third of the fires that I have to put out are related to trademarks, and clients not registering in time. And it's also, again, it's so tricky, everything that's happening with law, because everything's invisible. And unless it's in your periphery of awareness to know that you should be taking these proactive steps, there's no one telling you that you should. So I would say the contractor employee question and trademarks are also really important.
Yeah. I mean, just casually interviewing people for the podcast and then just talking with friends who teach and do fitness. It's amazing how often somebody's like, oh yeah, I had to fight for this brand name or this logo, or somebody tried to copy it locally, or I had to change it. Several of them, I really just had to change it because the legal fight for them wasn't worth it. So they had to change their entire legal name and branding.
Very real. Very, very, very real. I've been through it so many times, and it's like, I was thinking about it this weekend because I'm going through an issue right now with a client who didn't register, who's at risk of having to change all of their branding. They're like a multi six figure business. It wasn't a question of whether or not investing in a trademark's an issue or not. And it's sort of like the trademark in some ways, it's sort of like selling insurance as well, where it's like, hey, there's a possibility that you could lose all of this outside of your control and something that you're completely unaware about. So it's just like, I'll feel a lot better knowing that you have this protected. And also the big thing too about trademarks that people don't realize, in addition to the situations that you're alluding to, where, you know, someone got a cease and desist letter or had to invest a fight or whatever, if you ever want to sell your business, when they're going through the inventory of assets, having a registered trademark is a very valuable asset for your business. Whether you want to grow it through licensing or whether you want to sell the business to someone else. So it pays off in so many ways. And I just like, I'm a very, very, very big advocate for trademark registrations.
Awesome. Do you do that yourself, or do you partner with a trademark lawyer?
We have a trademark attorney who's on our team, who's full time. And that's what she does. She's an expert. She stays in her lane. She's not into fitness or yoga, and she doesn't have to be. She has to be amazing at registering trademarks, and that's what she does.
Awesome. Cool. I'm just curious. Like, is that an expensive process?
The cost with us is $3,188. That includes doing a search and preparing the application and filing the application with the USPTO. Trademarks are super technical, and they are not intuitive. Like, coming up with a gym membership agreement is intuitive because, okay, these are all the common, like whenever I'm setting a client up with a membership agreement, I'll be like, tell me the five biggest problems you've had with your members over the past 3 years. Late cancellations or not using or complaining or smelling bad or, you know, whatever, not respecting staff. Cool. Awesome. Boom, boom, boom. Intuitive. Great. Trademarks. It's just technical. It's a very technical process. I've done it for years. I register trademarks in Canada and the member of our team does them in the States, but it's sort of like, if you don't know how to fix a car, why would you try to fix a car? It's the exact same. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So the burning question, have your clients ever been sued before and how did that go?
I'm very lucky that I've worked with over 1100 clients and zero of them have been sued who have been using our documents. There's one situation that's ongoing that I believe is going to get resolved, but we'll see, where a client was not using our agreements. Someone fell on their head in a facility. And it's progressed to the point of submissions being filed and documents being filed. And that's a situation where, like, if the waiver of liability was airtight, I'm certain that it could have been avoided. But luckily, I'm very happy to say that all situations I've been in with my clients who are using our agreements, it's never even gotten close to that far.
Awesome, dude. Great. Yeah. Thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for sharing your wisdom. Where can listeners find you?
You can find the name of the law firm is Conscious Counsel. So the website is consciouscounsel.ca. On Instagram, we're at Conscious Counsel. And my name is Corey Sterling. I also have a podcast called Little Bit Different Podcast. I work online. I'm an entrepreneur for a couple of different businesses. So my whole thing is I do things a little bit differently. And I made a podcast about that. But just CorySterling. Look me up on Google. Come say hi. And thank you so much. This has been an awesome conversation. And I appreciate your questions and the opportunity to share.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's been fun. We should do it again.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.